Okay, Jürgen, can you just start by telling me when did your interest or awareness of energy and consumption start?
From a very early age, I have to say. All my brothers and sisters have come from a bigger family. They're very interested in energy, you know, saving, energy generation, supply. And so when I was a kid, from 14 years onwards, I was picking up on news what they had to say about energy. And there was a big discussion at the time in Germany about nuclear power and wind turbines and contra-nuclear power. There was a massive advertising campaign at the time by the traditional energy generation supply companies running for nuclear power. And I actually, up till about 14-15, I was a great fan of nuclear power, because it was sold to me as the only way to save the energy crisis and ever increasing world population. And you know, and I was quite idealistic, like I think everyone in my family, and we sort of tried to change things for the better. Again, being from my parents, who really want to prove that Germany was not just a country of Nazis, but we were actually quite decent people. And that's basically where it sort of stemmed from. And it was a big advertising campaign saying we need nuclear, otherwise Germany will, basically the lights will go out. And that was hammered home every day when you went to school. There were big posters stating that wind doesn't work, and all of these arguments, what do you do, the sun doesn't shine, the wind doesn't blow. And to say solar wasn't at that time really on the radar at all, it was only about wind and hydro. And that was often said as an argument, look, you don't like hydro, huge hydro power plants, so therefore you have to have nuclear. So.
And then did you get involved in the energy movement, the renewable energy movement in
Yeah, very much. I mean, the real trigger point was in Chernobyl. Yeah, that was really where that proved to me, by this time I was already disillusioned from nuclear, and that proved to me the point that nuclear isn't really the answer, and that really I put loads of effort in and actually trying to convince people on a very small level, really on a personal level, to go for renewable. One of it was, for example, I used to do gliding. With airplanes, you know, and we were on a very windy top of a hill position, you know, very nice, obviously for gliders, perfect. And I tried to convince my fellow members, but I was youngest by far, to actually go for wind turbines to actually produce our electricity off-site, because we had no electricity supply. Instead, we went for a huge diesel generator from an ex-German army diesel generator. And it really frustrated me at the time tremendously, because I couldn't make my argument saying, look, there is no point. And there was like big issues, because I think generated smoke. We didn't even need such a big generator, but I was completely overruled. Everyone was arguing against me at the time that we need to have it, and we dug huge channels for the exhaust pipes, for the exhaust fumes to go into the forest, so you wouldn't actually see it near the site where we were actually generating it. It was catastrophic, you know. It really wasn't nice.
And your peers at the time, your friends, were they like-minded?
No, absolutely not. Either people didn't care about it, or they just were totally anti. That was in this sense quite a bit of a loner. It was more because of family. You know, my one sister who was really into it and all of these, you know, tried to inform everyone about what's going on. So that is sort of what gave me the hold of it. And also, I did my apprenticeships from the 15 onwards, 16 onwards, I did my apprenticeship in a monastery. They had missionaries coming from all around the world. And then they told me about how they produce energy from the deepest jungle in Paraguay to Russian federal states, and how they do energy in Africa and so on and so forth, in really rural area. And that absolutely fascinated me, and I thought, well, it can be done, you know. You have to, you know, just cut down your consumption, and while you still sort of use what is available, harness the energy which surrounds us. And that was that really kicked all my interest off, you know, big time.
And what was your apprenticeship in at the monastery?
I did make an apprenticeship as a cabinet maker, you know. So I started off as a cabinet maker from very early age, but then I stayed for 3 years with these missionaries, and you know, it was supposed to be a missionary in Africa.
And where did that energy journey next take you then?
Well, you know, as soon as I was 18 and was more able to do things, I picked up, I became member, obviously, of Greenpeace to find out more about it, you know, Friends of the Earth, you know, various other organizations which were more locally active in my area. One of it was, for example, Energie Wende der Saar, which was like a magazine which I had distributed, everywhere in... Whenever I had spare time, I actually then, and via that, these connections, I learned more, got to know other people who actually cared about it in the same way I cared about it, with different ideas and often not agreeing, because at the time there was still great backing of nuclear power. I mean, you have to really understand, nuclear power was a big thing in Germany, much bigger than it was ever in Britain. I mean, it's laughable. You know, we have so many more power stations in Germany than you had in Britain. We had experimented with so many different designs in Germany than you ever did anywhere in the world. We had so many different groundbreaking designs, and they all failed miserably. You know, and that we actually backed out of nuclear is not just because of Germany, but because it was that anti-movement and actually proving. While, you know, proving that renewables do work, and that was completely contrary to what big utility companies try to make us believe. And one classic one is Corvian, Große Windkraftanlage, which was purposely built in the north of Germany to demonstrate that renewable energy doesn't work. And it's really terrible. I mean, today you can read up about it. There's been books published about that incident where they built Corvian with the sole purpose of failing. So they have an argument to build more nuclear power station. Yeah. So when you actually spoke about renewable energy and producing energy locally, because that was my main argument, get rid of oil supporting corrupt regimes. So we produce our energy locally, we are in control of it. Then everyone said, oh, well, nuclear, that's nuclear. And I said, but the argument that you still have to mine plutonium or whatever you use, or uranium, to actually burn, that doesn't even come into equation. The waste didn't come into equation by many people. And then slowly but surely people got educated and thought, actually you've got a point. You know, nuclear, we have a huge waste problem. It's not low carbon energy, because there's been no one successful decommissioning of any nuclear power station in the world. So you can't make that claim, because the circle hasn't been closed anywhere in the world yet. So, you know, you can't claim these things. Well, you can claim anything. But that is mainly the background of that. It was like, yeah.
So did that energy narrative then spur you into action, I suppose, as there was a certain change in societal acceptance of renewable energy?
Yeah, I mean, then obviously the breakthrough came, because then, you know, we then try to advertise renewable energy, and again that goes another few years later by, you know, distributing magazines like Energie Wende der Saar, where we really try to get interest. And to my, you know, surprise, a lot of people then shared my interest. So even, you know, nobody who was before a member of Greenpeace or any organization or cared about it, all of a sudden people did care about it. In the street, people would approach you and you give out a magazine and really engage in conversations. And it was all of a sudden very rewarding, where for years I found it incredibly unrewarding. All of a sudden I thought, like, you get some feedback. People actually really click on. And then we had the idea to just put like a few wind turbines up to demonstrate that it works, that power could be, you know, generated. The interest was enormous, and the funny thing was, at the time we only quoted English sources. At the time, you know, we went, you know, the Centre for Alternative Technology in Wales, you know, and all of these things, the first wind turbine or wind park in Europe, or was probably the one in Britain, somewhere in Devon, I believe, some 25 years ago, and we quoted these things. You know, we said, look, you know, it can be done. Whereas in Germany it was completely locked into nuclear, you know, and it was quite amazing, and more people became interested. And then all of a sudden we had huge financial backing to create a wind park, which then became one of the biggest privately organized wind turbine parks in Europe. It was huge, you know, we had millions of euros of marks at the time, Deutsche Marks at the time.
Yeah. Starts to change people's perceptions and support for renewables. I'm just interested to go back when you were talking about the nuclear industry and the plant that they built up in northern Germany.
Yeah.
What was that that they did?
They basically built a huge wind turbine, which was cause Windkraft, in that sense, for big wind turbine, yeah. And it was a short version, Corvia. And it's amazing, you know, anyone can Google that. It's an amazing piece of work. And they tried to actually build a huge wind turbine, much bigger, the biggest wind turbine ever built. But for once, one has to say, to give these people credit, nothing was done on that scale ever before. So they just didn't have the experience. The other thing is, was very simply that they pushed engineers to that corner to do something because, you know, utility companies, which was at the time NWR, NVR, yeah, North, you know, it's E.ON in England, they basically pushed to have that thing built, yeah. And it failed. It never produced a trickle of electricity. It was a huge turbine, and the gearbox failed. You know, then bits started raining down on it. You know, it never worked. And they took that as an example. You know, for a few weeks, it may work, but with very little electricity. They said, look, you know, we can't produce energy. And you know, in 98, as late as 98. You know, utility companies run this advertising campaign that Germany needs nuclear, you know, and the only way to produce electricity is with nuclear in Germany, and there is no alternative to it. And Germany would only produce ever 4% of its electricity needs at the utmost using renewable electricity. And all these targets ever given, all these predictions estimations proved wrong again and again. They were always underestimated, and the same happened today here, and the same happened in Britain. And I see, you know, that they always downplay the part which nuclear, solar, as well, cold fusion. That's why often I refer to as nuclear power as solar power. So I often refer as a jokingly remark, my house in East Acton is actually powered by nuclear power source, i.e. cold fusion solar. And so that gets always dismissed, and it's a great shame, because you see that it's all these estimations were basically made to suit to your traditional energy generation firms, you know, and that's what it's all about. Mm. So having the Corvian built, it was then dismantled, I think a year, not even a year later. It was completely dismantled, and basically that is a proof, children, look, it doesn't work, you know. And that was, I think that was in the 1980s, early 1990s when that was done. And then there was Bailey, they thought that would quieten the whole thing. But the weird thing was Britain powered ahead with so much renewable energy, particular wind, you know. And so we could use that as an example to say, look, you know, it can be done, you know, so why can it not be done here? And there was no argument against it anymore.
So then you were involved in the what was at the time the largest wind farm in Europe, is that right?
Yeah.
SAR. And where did your energy journey take you from there?
Well, from that, basically, I left that. I put money into that, my own money, which hardly earned. I mean, it's not like any wealth, so to say. Again, people thought I was crazy doing that, but I put it in. It was a 25-year project. And to my surprise, you can do this these days in England, and in Germany you can't anymore. So it's quite weird to see, you know, a lot of good things have been copied from Germany to England, but now they actually cut it back in Germany. I mean, the brown coal, you know, the lignite coal in Germany. It's a very sad part of the Energiewende, where basically still utility companies try desperately to stay in business by actually selling really, really the dirtiest of all of all fossil fuels, you know, and doing it, unfortunately, very successfully, you know. Whereas in Britain, fortunately, coal is seriously on the way out, where Germany is actually now lacking well behind. So it's kind of a strange one.
So you came to England, and you say England was, compared to where Germany was at the time, was kind of leading the way in renewable technology.
No, but not anymore. When I came over in 95, Germany was by leading, and then, you know, then you had the implementation that we cut down the nuclear power station. You had the Green Party, which together with the Labour government formed an amazing agenda, you know, from 98 till 2002 or something like that. The Green Party together with the Labour government was in power, and they really changed the landscape. They really introduced a 1,000-roof programme to actually introduce for the Voltaire League on large scale, because I said we just have to scale up the production facilities and the prices will come down. And that was the idea. So why they didn't, they did not say we shut down nuclear, because the Green Party in Germany was always to shut down immediately nuclear power, but they were also pragmatic. They said, well, hold on a second, we can't do that. So what they wanted to do, they facilitated a change by actually, you know, rolling the red carpet out for renewables, particularly solar and wind. And by doing so, they didn't necessarily cut back the nuclear, but they introduced gently renewable energy. And that gentle really overtook every estimate. Any estimate they'd done was overdone many times. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know. And their own goals they wanted to achieve in 2000, they're, you know, done multiple times. Mm-hmm. You know, it was incredible, you know. It really rushed. And I liked it, obviously, and so I went actually away from Germany, because we also introduced car sharing. I set up car sharing in town, and we done. There was a lot of movement doing actually changing things. We set up car sharing in Saarbrücken. We done like cycling against one way streets, you know, experimenting. And you know, I was involved from very early on with politics, but I'd never been politically active as such. But I barely involved as many people as I could, and it was successful. So successful that then it went on my nerves, because you couldn't go anywhere without anyone bending your ear about renewables. So it was like so extreme that I actually wanted to get away from it, because, you know, which I then was, England was so refreshing, you could just talk about anything and you didn't have to talk about energy, so to say. So for me, it actually came quite nice, and that's something which I actually miss now again, to talk to more people about energy and what it's all about.
But then you did energy and generating your own energy at some point after you came to England reappear in your life?
Absolutely. That was then the next phase, because in Germany I always thought on a large scale, and here I went all the way back down to my own, you know, consumption and production of energy. So whereas before I always lived in a way, you know, environmentally aware and try to reduce my carbon footprint or energy consumption, carbon, whatever you want to call it, to bare minimum, knowing very well, you know, it's all about sharing resources. Then I thought I was bolder and I want to get renewable energy done. And we were living on a boat, and then I converted my boat to have a wind turbine. And we had produced a bit of electricity, but it didn't work the way I visualized it. So I wanted to be bolder, you know, things. There were a lot of disappointment on the way when I sort of tried to produce my own energy. And then I basically built a boat where I thought, well, that's it, you know, I'm going to cover it with solar panels and produce my own energy and be totally autark or self-sufficient in terms of energy. Yeah, and I achieved it actually quite easily. It was quite a bit of an outlay in terms of finance, but it can be done, and I done a lot of work myself. Yeah, and I had some boat built in Britain, which was fantastic boat builders, and then I could then put all the other changes on I want to do. And again, you have fantastic pioneers in Britain, which is just not enough appreciated. And so I had people who produced an amazing engine called the Lynch motor, and I actually met the inventor of that motor himself, you know. I had someone who installs these motors, you know, had a company running for years, tried to really break into the market for solar-powered boats, because boats are just made, just fantastic opportunity for having them electrically powered. And that poor chap, he's been doing it for years, installing these motors, battery banks and solar panels and wind turbines, but it's just not enough to give him enough business, so he gave up in the end. But I could still use his expertise to help me along with my project.
And you designed it in a specific way, was it?
Well, yeah, the design was mainly to be as simple as possible, cost effective as possible, insulated fantastically well. So that is the key is insulation. The key is, so in any way, reducing power consumption, and then basically cover it with solar panels. It looked more like a satellite than a boat.
A Bauhaus design.
Yeah, no, it was Bauhaus because that's inspiration. Be it basically simple design, but still aesthetically pleasing. And that's what I try to achieve with Bauhaus. So, you know, it looks a bit like, people said, it's a floating brick. But yeah, it had a proper hull, and it was totally manoeuvrable, and you could drive on it, cruise on it without any problems.
And did you have the expertise and the knowledge to actually build that and develop the renewable on it?
Absolutely, because by that time I contacted so many people, I met really inspirational characters as well, who had ideas and walked the walk, not just people who talked the talk, people who really walked it. And because I had contact with these people, it seemed to me no problem at all, you know. And so, yes, I did it. It was quite time consuming. I spent some 600 hours building it or fitting it out. So the hull was completely built in the Midlands. And then the rest I just barely bought in from friends, family, and now through all my journey, I met so many different people who work actually in the industry. I know people who work in the PV industry in Germany, not here in the UK. So they gave me advice. I could get products which I couldn't get in England at the time, and I could get things incredibly cheap. That was 2010. In 2010, my solar panels cost me €12,000, which was like, at the time, probably 8K, 10K, between 8 and 10K. In pounds, and that's like 1.7 kilowatt, which is relatively small in size, and it took 25 square meters. And only 3 years later, I installed solar on my house, and that was 16 square meter, so not 25, 16 square meter of PV solar, and I have a 3.34 kilowatt system, so for half of the cost of what I paid 3 years earlier. I mean, the price been just so quickly down to technology, it's fantastic. So I'm really pleased.
Because you decided to move then from a boat living on the barge to moving to a house,
yeah,
with a family and young family.
Family with two children and on a boat with no certainty about the mooring rights. That was just too much. So it was an idea. It was just like, no, we have to move now. That was like, you know, I didn't like that anymore. So yeah, so we then moved on to dry land. So I took straight away to convert my house to energy neutral. And again, like, because the interest rates were so low, it was to me like a no-brainer taking quite a bit of a loan out, you know, £12,000 at the time for my PV solar system, including inverter and everything, which was on the boat extra. So on the boat, you know, only 3 years earlier on the boat, the solar panels cost me, let's say, 10K, yeah. And then the inverter, which was a Swiss-made Snuda inverter, it's the best inverter you can buy, but that was £8,000, yeah, £8,000 for an inverter, yeah. And the battery bank cost me another £1,500. So it was quite some expense, you know. And now it's peanuts. I mean, my whole system, including inverter, installation, scaffolds, a whole lot, was £12,000. 3 years later, and there I had to install everything myself, so the prices just went rapidly down.
And so what have you, can you just explain a bit about what you've done to your house in Acton?
Well, basically, insulation is a key again. It's absolutely insulated. I did internal insulation. Cheap and cheerful was a motto, yeah, because I can't afford much expense. So it's internal insulation with kind of polystyrene PU boards, yeah, and then putting other board in front of it. And then double glazing, you know, I added a conservatory to it to increase the heat gain in the springtime. Even in wintertime, I have an enormous heat gain, so I heat actually the house with the conservatory, and have underfloor heating, electric panel underfloor heating, which is just like a mat you roll out. It's again as cheap as chips. Very easy to install, very quickly to install, get thermostats on it. And then I actually bought an air source heat pump, a DIY one, which I pre-pressurized. You install them yourself, you just barely need a bicycle spanner, and that's it. And that cost £400, so I tried to do everything as cheap as I could. And also, you know, coming from conservation, where reversibility of a treatment, I work on priceless objects. I work on objects which literally millions and millions of pounds worth. And readability, reversibility of whatever you do is absolutely essential for anything you do, and record keeping. So I can say on my house, anything, everything can be reversed without much effort, and that was very, I was very keen on that idea, because the house we built in 1920s, it's an absolute amazing building. They're really lovely, nicely built houses, and I just didn't want to sort of spoil that for anyone later if they want to reverse, go back to whatever.
But you've now come to a point where you're carbon neutral in your house here as well, and saving a lot of money, I would guess, on energy bills as well.
Absolutely. It's you know, as I said, the key is insulation and you know, buying a fridge which actually is the right size. I have an induction cooker and many other things. So therefore, my energy cost at the moment is £50 a month. That's all my energy cost. That is because I got only electricity, I got no gas. Yeah, I got rid of my gas meter. They could take that down. They disconnected me from the main gas, so fracking not in my name. And I barely have good energy or ecotricity. It's a renewable only energy supplier. And so I'm definitely carbon neutral, and I produce over the course of a year 3,500 kilowatt hours of electricity with my PV solar. Obviously much more in the summer, less in the winter, but if you would combine it with a wind turbine on a local microgrid, you would balance that out without any problems whatsoever, because winter you have more wind, it's an absolute no-brainer. And I use up 4,000, bit over 4,000 kilowatt hours a year. So that means I'm nearly energy neutral with a family of four. I mean, it's a house with, you know, it's a small house, but it's enough.
Mm-hmm. You know. And what do your kids think about it? The way that you,
well, I try to not to get them too, you know, my daughter, obviously, she's now 10. She picks up on all of that now. And she looks in magazines and she says, look, and now she's aware, everyone sort of points out solar panels to me because it really makes my day. If I see other houses with solar panels, and when we went to Germany, just now, I've seen all these huge wind turbines. I took pictures of the biggest wind turbine in the world, you know, it was there. And it's enormous. I love it. They're gentle giants. They're lovely. They're huge. And people don't complain because they're so big you don't hear them anymore. I mean, they're just, you know, it's incredible. So my kids love it. They're really nice. And we have children parties in our house, you know, so I get people. I have neighbors and I do open home days where people can come and have a look and talk to me and see what works, you know.
So you're trying to spread the message of what is achievable in a normal domestic house.
Correct. And with little money and yes, effort. I did put lots of hours in. But you know, you either need money or time, you know. But it's all durable.
Do you have any political engagement over here with?
Well, I did sort of. I did in the end. I did join a political party. Yeah, but it's just simply. I just feel like the problem here in the country. It's like there is no, you know, big green party or functioning. Environmentalist, it doesn't work in this country somehow, and because there is no pressure from the environmental lobbying as it was in Germany, that is why I actually joined the party, to put that more pressure on the government, be one of another one, rather than, you know, people go to UKIP and join UKIP, and you know, that's all that right, everyone goes to the right, but you know, it's just not, you know, I just find it really sad, and I only understood years later why in Germany we had so much success, because there was this pressure from the Green Party. It was a Green Party of 12%, and because it's a representative election, representative parliament, you know, i.e. you have 12%, you have 12%
proportionally,
which isn't here the case, and I think that is what makes such a huge difference in Germany, you know, why it went so quickly at the time, and because people now in Germany got tired of the Energiewende, so to say. And they pay quite heavy on their electricity bill, so it's not only plain sailing, but certainly not. But it proved it works, and because it works, you have to actually think forward. How do you actually introduce a different way of taxation, a different way of taxing people if they produce their energies themselves? And that is a really big problem, because that's the biggest argument for utility companies. They can make huge revenues, they can pay huge amount of people, and they release a huge amount of power, yeah, which can be taxed. And that is their argument at the moment, and that's why they're still around us, because otherwise we would be all having renewables. Mm.
And where do you see the future of energy in the UK? What would you like to see, and what do you think the reality is? Are they the same thing?
Well, they're sort of a bit time delayed, you know. The future is for me renewables. It can't be stopped. You know, there has to be really a third world war to stop that from happening. Which I wouldn't even be surprised that some people actually really try hard to introduce, so to say. Because if everything goes it's as it was in the last 50 or the last 100 years, you know, if you look like how coal was introduced, and you know, maybe it's go back 300 years, you had a wind turbine, a water mill, or a windmill and a water mill, and you had the local miller had either water or windmill, and Hugh Bailey Bear, he was a local, you know, the local duke, he was a local one who everyone had to go to get their wheat turned to flour and whatever, get work done. And then basically came the coal industrial revolution. Now we could actually release huge amount of power. I mean, that is the energy density of coal cannot be matched by renewables. That is the thing which is at the moment so exploited for the wrong reason, you know, because you cannot match that. You barely get a bucket of coal, a bucket of oil, a bucket of gas, you can transport. You can't do this with electricity. Now with lithium, lithium ion batteries, we're just about to see that change, you know. But it's just so, yeah, difficult. But that revolution did happen. So we went from locally produced power to coal, which could be mined anywhere, and then you could manufacture whatever you like, wherever you had cheap labor. So that was a coal. Then coal was replaced by oil, you know, and so on. There's always been some replacement going on, and now renewables definitely going to replace all other energy sources. You're going to have electrically powered airplanes, electrically powered passengers. So when people complain about Heathrow expansion, whatever, who cares? Because in 10 years' time, you're going to have 15 years' time, all these airplanes going to be powered electrically. Make no mistake, that's just going to happen. You know, and if there wouldn't be the utility companies who desperately cling on to their life, it would already have happened. You know, look at mobile phones, how quickly they developed that technology. And that is where I think, you know, if you would take all these breaks out, because they're artificially slowed down, they're purposely slowed down, because these big companies just don't want to go bust. They don't want to end up like Kodak. They don't want to end up who missed the digitalization. They don't want to end up like HMV, who missed digitalization. They missed it, and now they do everything in their power to actually slow down the transition. They can slow it, they can't stop it. And that's what's going to happen. It's now just a question of time, how long it's going to take, and how many poor people have to suffer because of that slow transition. Because if you would have this transition quicker, you would spread wealth. And if you didn't have Africa, you were a rich country like Nigeria, no one would have to suffer, because they suffer because of the corrupt regimes, corrupt oil, etc., etc. If you have microgrids, your own power, you cut all of that out, and you could have really, you would see peace, much more peace than you can achieve with oil and the traditional energy generator. So future for England, it's bright, absolutely bright, for Europe, for the whole world, I got no doubt about that. But it's going to be very, very rocky indeed. It's not going to be plain sailing, not at all. These people don't give up without a fight, and they're going to do everything. They put every card they're going to do.
And just finally, your own energy journey in the future. Have you got any plans? Is there a project that you think you'd like to work on next?
Well, no, I mean, on the house, I can't do it anymore. That's all done. I bought a small ruin in Portugal, which I'm now going to, probably in a couple of years' time or 3 years' time, I'm going to put more energy in, take possibly unpaid leave or something, to really go down. And there I want to get completely off the grid, have an electric car, and I really want to prove the pudding that you can do with a bit of roof space, you can live completely autark, and you have an electrically powered car, and no more fossil fuel, bye bye, no more fossil, no more gas, nothing, no nuclear,
And if that Third World War does happen, you've got somewhere that you can escape.
Yes, hopefully. But yeah, no, I think, you know, it's, yeah, that's the only way. And instead of spreading the word, you know, I got again open home this summer. Spreading the word, talking to people, you know, people have to realize it's all energy related. If you're talking about NHS, if you're talking about unemployed people, if you would have, you know, decent job, you know, you need to have wind turbines, need to be renewed. The gearboxes just don't last long. They just don't, you know. You can balance a grid with enough wind turbines. If you have enough solar panels, they need to be recycled, you know. You have a huge industry. You can make a huge amount of climate jobs, and you get taxation by actually taxing people working for that thing. You know, you have electric cars, you know, they are simpler, they're much simpler. And the reason why in Germany electric cars just didn't pick up, because you have a huge car industry, which all based on burning fuels. If you look at the reasoning why things are the way they are, it makes perfect sense, mm. You know. And in Britain, you had a certain elite who had mining rights, you know. Look who financed UKIP here in Britain. He got the biggest mining rights in Britain and in other countries. You know, it's no coincidence. It's like there's a particular power structure which is in place, and you have to live with these realities and try to talk and change things, and it will happen, you know. Can't alienating the people, and that's you have to engage with everybody, you know. That's the main core.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you very much for that, Jürgen.
Hope that is something all right, but.